Well, good afternoon, everybody. What I'm going to be talking about is new equipment that we've been working on for vegetable systems. In the abstract, it said strawberry systems as well, but I decided to focus it in on vegetables instead. And what I like to do in my presentations is I can be more efficient and actually reach my stakeholders back at home better if I make a video, show you the video, and then we talk about what I presented in the video. So I'll go to the next slide, which will be the video, and then that lasts about 7 minutes, and then we've got plenty of time to talk about that.
Push down the cover crop in front of the mower, and this can mean
Got the Legos in my bag there in case you don't believe me about the equipment. Anyway, does any questions or thoughts on this? Yeah, Carrie?
First I have to ask how you make a video test program engineers to do this.
Yeah, so the question was what software I use to make the video. I use a program called Camtasia. It's a simple program, but very powerful. You can use it as a video editor, or you can use it as a screen capture that you just make, use to run off of PowerPoint. Yeah, I'm happy to give you more tips on that, you know, later if you want. Thank you. Yeah, so the question was, are the cover crops on beds being irrigated with drip tape? Was that?
Right, and the vegetables.
And the vegetables. In our most of our vegetable systems, we have moved towards drip. The only ones that we haven't used, that we're not using drip on for the most part, are the high-density crops like spinach or baby mix. But in the with the cover crop here, we actually did not drip irrigate it. We could do that if water was a real problem some winters, although trying to get growers to put drip tape into a cover crop, which is not providing much of an economic benefit, is a real challenge. What we could do, though, is put the drip in between the beds, have it there to just germinate the cover crop, and then retrieve it. We generally reuse our drip tape for about 5 years, so the first time you buy it, it's the most expensive, and then we spool it back up and splice it back together and reuse it for many years. But In the case with that middle picture there, what we had actually done was we pre-irrigated our beds, got a weed flush, went through and took that weed flush out, and then ideally we plant to moisture. And we get a beautiful, relatively clean cover crop emergence out of that, which we then can go through and cultivate out if there are other weeds. Sure, so the question is about timing of different operations in our year-round system. Let's start with, say, right now, November. This is around the time that we would typically start ending our vegetable crops. There are some vegetables that grow through the winter, things like broccoli, but the majority of the production happens from, say, March through November. So right now, when I go back, we'll be planting our cover crops on beds. We'll take those through to about February or so, and then we'll start getting those beds ready for the next vegetable. Or for the first vegetable, we would typically grow two vegetable crops a year in order to remain profitable. So this land, it rents for about $3,000 an acre per year, and that's just the cost of the land rent. You've then got to pay for the cost of water and all your other inputs, so it's extremely high-value land, and that's one of the real challenges with these systems is how do you get growers to put in a cover crop which complicates their vegetable system? Cover cropping is a pain. It really is challenging, and the biggest issue with it is residue management. When you go in to plant a crop like broccoli, which you generally would seed, in this case we were actually transplanting, but what you don't want is any kind of residue. You want a really clean bed top. And it's really hard to do that with in the same timing if you had a cover crop in there. We can do it, but it takes a much better manager to do it. Yeah, so in our typical system where we would grow the cover crop on a flat field without beds, we would come in, we'd flail mow it. You know, the cover crop, say, as tall as I am, or a little bit shorter maybe. We'd come in, we'd flail mow it. We would then ideally come through with a soil spader, which is kind of like a much more effective, it's kind of like a rototiller, but it's a little different. It spades that material in very slowly at about, say, 0.6 to 0.9 miles an hour. We would then let that sit for, say, 2 to 3 weeks or 4 weeks, re-bed up the field, shape those beds, and then plant into that. So it's a pretty, there's a lot of steps right after that cover crop is put into the ground that you have to kind of get timed right. I saw another hand or two there. Uh-huh. Great question. Cover crops are extremely uncommon in Salinas Valley, and we produce 90% of the lettuce and a lot of the other vegetables for the entire country. What most farmers do there, organic and conventional, is they leave their fields bare all winter. And that's a real problem because we've got all these high input crops where we put a lot of fertilizer in, a lot of which was not used by the previous crop. And then the rains come to recharge our groundwater system, and that leads to large amounts of nitrogen leaching. So that's why we have high nitrate water in our area, and it's something that is changing, but it's a hard change. Yeah, so the question is what happens to our equipment after we've developed it? Generally in our area, we've developed a few types of, a few pieces of equipment. This one for beds is still in the development process, and actually I should mention all of ours are always in the development process. We never quite get it right. But we've got real good fabricators in our area, and the hope is that they will then take the design and improve on it. Often what we do too, so we've got this other system where we're planting cover crops between plastic mulch covered beds for strawberry production. We actually lend out that implement to growers to try out. And we had about 600 to 1,000 acres of strawberry or cover crops planted between strawberry fields 2 years ago using our equipment, and it came back, you know, all banged up, and we figured out which parts needed to be modified. But the hope is that the growers would just start fabricating their own or have a fabrication company do that. Other questions or thoughts?
Yeah, my wish list is a front-mounted flail mower. Have you agreed with that?
Yeah, so the question is, what about front-mounted flail mowers? I would love that. The challenge with that always is, how do you drive it?
Yeah.
Hydraulic drives are a pain. There are, or I've heard that there was a tractor, a Kubota way back, that could actually run a front PTO driven, what's that?
There's been several.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that would be the ideal situation. You know, ironically, or interestingly, what some growers do is they actually drive their tractor backwards. I've seen pictures of people, you know, mowing cover crops backwards, acres and acres, to get around this issue of the cover crop pushing down the material in front. You get a sore neck. Our systems are not designed very well for dealing with residue. We've got to completely change the way we think about it. And, you know, these are like our mowers. They're just, this issue of there being large strips left in the field after we mow it is a real challenge, because you end up having to go back and forth across the field way more often, just because maybe 25% or even 10% of the field wasn't mowed well. Because you've got, you know, 6 foot long pieces of rye laying down that won't disc in or won't spade in well. So, yeah, so the question is there any interest in silage or baling? That's a great question. In our area, we're pretty far from animal production operations, and that's one of our challenges, is that if our systems were more integrated, we could remove this material, use it as value-added product in another system, and then simplify that. But because we're far away, it's tough. Generally, with broccoli, some growers will actually try to sell their broccoli residue or get rid of it, but the grower often has to pay the company that comes in to remove it. So it's our ag systems are not as integrated as, if they were, they would be far more sustainable, I think. And there's all kinds of issues with food safety that I won't get into, but involving that. Yeah, so the question's about this juicing idea and whether or not there's some other components like glucosinolates or others that might be helpful in that. I've experimented with grasses, brassicas, and some other things for juicing. They all work really well if you get the plant when it's really succulent. So what you want to do is get it when it's, say, something like mustard will accumulate most of its nitrogen by about 50% biomass production level. You take it off then, and it's so succulent that you could just about wring it out. I mean, it's very tender. You could eat it, actually. And that's the stage you want to get it at, before it's got a lot of carbon mixed in with that, all those nutrients. I've used it in some preliminary studies, and it must be adding more than just nitrogen, because in a sand mixture, we get really good crop growth. There's probably, you know, there's sugars and all kinds of other things in there, so it's not just nutrients. The challenge is, can we scale it up? And right now it's kind of, a lot of folks think I'm crazy, but I think it's good. Well, there's options there.
Okay, thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.